Good morning. This is Glenn Coble. You're listening to On the Air with Glenn Coble today. And I will be joined shortly by none other than my own son. And we're going to talk about self-publishing and maybe what you can do to get your stuff out there. If you think you're a great writer, why not go for it? You can do it fairly inexpensively now. And so why not go for it, right? Okay, you're listening to WWGH 107.1. And we'll be talking to Christopher here in momentarily as I think I have him on the line. Hi, you're on the line. Can you hear me?
I can. How are you doing, Dad?
I'm doing well. All right. Oh, I got a little squeal. Do you have your radio on?
Or I do not.
Oh, okay. Well, it must be me then. Okay. Well, I've already spread the... Oh, my goodness. I don't know why I'm getting that squeal. I got it. I figured it out. I brought KJ on. We call him... His family calls him KJ. So it's okay, right? KJ, we can call you KJ on the air?
Certainly.
Christopher works down at a university in Columbus, but he is also an author, and we had him on, I don't know, what, almost a year ago, would you say?
Yeah, it was like May or April or something.
And he was writing then, and I think you had 3 books published already, and now you're up to 11?
Nine.
Nine, okay.
More coming.
With a couple in the works, right?
Many more.
Well, what our listeners like to listen to, well, and by the way, my listeners know that I'm not a great reader, but his mother reads everything. So, we're getting a squeal for some reason or other. I have no idea why we're doing that.
I'm on my cell phone. Is that a problem?
It might be, but make sure it's close to your mouth.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, his mother reads everything, every word. Well, not every word. She told me she doesn't read it when it gets really violent. What type of books do you write, Christopher? I've read your first one. I read a little bit of it. I know that's terrible to say that you don't read your own son's books, but I get the word from his mother because of my lack of reading ability. So, anyway, what type of books do you write, Christopher?
So I write science fiction and fantasy novels of probably some of them are a little bit more standard kind of, you know, like the science fiction series I have, which is called Hell's Jesters. That's more of a Star Wars-y kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But I also write a couple series of fantasy novels, some one-offs. And in general, most of them have kind of this, it's funny because somebody asked me where I get the ideas from, and usually I'm not very original. I actually base a lot of the subject, like the core of the subject matter, on things I read in history, because I'm kind of a history nerd, and so some of the root stories that lie under some of these are come from that background. So science fiction and fantasy, though, in general. And apparently they're kind of violent, so.
Well, that's what your mother says. Anyway, how did you, now let's see, what was your major in college? Go ahead and tell our listeners.
My undergraduate was English creative writing, and I had a minor in history, so that's where the...
But creative writing, you started out, if I recall correctly, you wanted to be a doctor, and... I'm not going to say you failed at it. You just decided it wasn't your cup of tea,
yeah.
And you went into the creative writing. So if our listeners are interested in getting into writing their own stuff and publishing it, would you suggest they get a degree in it, or can you do it just on willpower?
Oh, you can do it on willpower.
Can you?
I would say the willpower and just innate stubbornness have served me better than anything in my education.
Your sister is not on the line, but she'd agree with that, I'm sure.
willpower, stubbornness, and just, I mean, as you know, Dad, I have a healthy ego, so.
Yeah, well, you were given it by a perfect gentleman.
I suppose you're talking about yourself.
Yes, I am, of course. And your mother is not too short on ego either. So,
I think those traits are kind of key to, you know, surviving any of it. Because, I mean, it's a long slog. I've only started making money on it in the last few months. It takes a long time, but I'm saying that's fine because I always figured it would be a long process to build, you know, up a base. Going back to the education thing, I wouldn't say it's a waste of time or anything to get an education in writing. I mean it served me well in my career because I use my full-time career, which is I'm in data and analytics, which is it seems very far from what I studied. But when I'm trying to explain complex, you know, topics and subjects to other people who are not, you know, steeped deep in math and nerdery, you know, it helps to be able to write about it and speak clearly about these things. So it certainly served me well, just in a different way than I think I originally envisioned.
Did you ever get to a point, and I don't truly know this, even though I'm your father, did you get to a point where you felt like chucking it all?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
You're talking about the writing?
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly. The route to publishing, not self-publishing, but what is often referred to as traditional publishing, is designed to, I think it's kind of designed to break people. So you go through this whole process, and I've done it many, many times, always with the same result, which was, I was happy if I failed. Usually you heard nothing.
Yeah.
But you submit to the, you know, the big, it's I think not a big five publishers anymore, I think it's the big four, which have all their various different, you know, imprints. And you submit to editors and hope that they like, you know, what you send them. And you send, I did have one or two things published in magazines, but those were like little shorts, and I did a review of something once it got published, and I was needlessly excited about that.
What can you make if you're published in a magazine? Can you make some money?
You have to be prolific to make money in magazines. Uh-huh. But most people who get into that are. I mean, they write lots of either short stories or articles, and they have lots of, you know, magazines they're contacting. Magazines actually seem to be adjusting to the more digital world much more quickly than, like, the book publishers, as a matter of fact. So there's more opportunity in magazines now than there had been for, like, 30 years, which is kind of a flip. But the big publishers, they, you know, you have to go through this long, arduous process of review, and a lot of it is fickle and stupid, and you know, you don't understand why they'd say no. And I mean, it's just, and if you ever delve into, I mean, it's not wise, but if you ever delve into the social media of some of the people who make these decisions, it's just,
you wonder why they're there.
You do, you wonder. And actually, that was kind of the epiphany I had. So even if you're successful going the traditional route, you're talking about a multi-year waiting period. Yeah. So to even get a nibble. And I had this kind of epiphany around 45 where I was sort of trying to tease out if there was interest from this one publisher. And it dawned on me that they were talking 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like to even tell you, you know, whether they would consider it. And I was like, holy crap, I'll be 47. And I am that now, of course.
Yeah. I've already told the fans.
And the self-publishing thing has been really going on for a long time, but it really started to explode with Amazon's Kindle and Barnes & Noble's Nook, and just the more portable devices that kind of popularized e-books. And I said to myself, I could probably publish my own stuff in 2 months rather than waiting on these guys for 2 years, and probably make more money, because even after you get on somebody's publishing schedule, you still have to wait more time for them to even bring it out. And I won't even get into the nutsy stuff that goes into contracts and intellectual property and all that. So I had reached this point where, like, I either go this self-pubbing route or I just throw it all on the wall. And like I said earlier, I'm too dang stubborn to just throw it down. So I went this route, and that's what this experience, this odyssey or whatever, has been so far.
I was reading some trivia before you came on the air, well, in the last 45 minutes, about authors, and one of them just jumped out at me. F. Scott Fitzgerald once danced on the lawn of publishers of Doubleday to attract Joseph Conrad, who was a very famous author, and he did that until the caretaker threw him off the lawn. Have you ever done anything crazy like that to get noticed?
No. Okay. Well, I have, but not to get the attention of a publisher.
Yeah, I know, to get attention
of
girls.
To get the attention of Athens PD, but...
Oh, by the way, he went to OU, and yes, he's been to Halloween more times than his mother and I like to admit.
I actually can't remember. Probably not something I should admit.
All right, enough giving away of our family secrets. Are you happy the way you're going? I mean, you've got 9 books out. Are you comfortable just doing the self-publishing things, or do you not think it's just self-publishing? The word "just" doesn't sound. It sounds kind of negative.
Well, there are people who are, I mean, probably more than anyone knows, because this stuff isn't well tracked, and Amazon is only one forum, and they ain't telling anybody.
Uh-huh.
But there are a significant number of people who make a living from this self-publishing thing.
Cool.
So are that's you, always an, what's that?
Oh, well, I was just wondering, are you expecting to make a lot of money, or are you in it to get your own self-recognition?
So I definitely would say I'm in it to become independently employed.
Okay, cool.
So to make a living. Now, I'm fortunate in that I've had a nice long career in the real world.
Yeah.
And I have a very supportive, loving wife who has a good career as well. So,
and your mother buys all your books.
Yeah. she doesn't, actually. They're too violent.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
they're not her thing, and that's cool. She does read a lot, but she's read one or two of mine, but it's not her.
Oh, I think she's over one or two. I think she's at least 3. So, anyway.
Maybe.
Yeah, anyway.
So the long-term goal would be to make a living from it, but to answer your first question, I'm having a blast. It's
good.
A lot of fun. It's what I am anyway, so I was doing it anyhow, so I might as well just do this.
Well, now you explained to me what your regimen is when we were down Memorial Day-ing with you. How do you organize yourself to write?
Okay, so I get up, and I had to teach myself to do this. So this wasn't something that happened overnight. So I realized, in order to be producing enough stuff, that I felt like I could build up a foundation of work. Because, you know, if you go out there selling one book on Amazon, there are 8 million other pieces of work out there, at least, that you're competing for. So if you attract one person to your brand and all you got is one book, it's not going to cut it.
Because
by the time you have the next one out, they've lost interest. So you have to have that first. So that's part of my business plan.
You've got to keep it like a chain rolling of more and more books.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be this crushingly exhausting treadmill thing. I'm fortunate that I have kind of a backlog of stuff that I never published, that I was trying to get published through traditional routes, that I'm just kind of cranking out in the middle of putting out new stuff, which has allowed me to go from 3 to 9 books in a short period of time. But my regimen is basically, I taught myself how to basically get up at 5 a.m. every morning before everyone else is up, and I write until I start having, you know, the duties of dad and husband and, you know, employee. And I can usually crank, on a good day, I'll crank out 1,200 to 1,500 words in the morning. Sometimes I only get to 1,000, But, you know, I'm not a super fast writer. If I have an hour and change, I can get about 1,000 words out. And I do that every work day. And so I kind of treat it like my graveyard shift job.
Uh-huh.
And then I pretty much have a full day of, you know, what everyone else does, which is take care of the family and do the job, the day job.
You might tell them where you work. I keep forgetting the name of the university.
I work at Franklin
University. Oh, yeah, okay.
And it's a great place to work. But I try not to let the, you know, try not to cross the streams between,
sure.
You know, this stuff and that, which I usually, like I said, because I kind of regiment myself, I mean, I'm usually burned out on my own crap by about 6 a.m. or 6:30 a.m. in the morning. So I can pretty much switch my brain then to other things by then. But that's pretty much what I do.
Cool.
And it took some doing to get into that mind space. I had to change things like not watching so much TV
mm-hmm.
and not enjoying quite so many
libations
in the evening. because believe it or not, all stories aside about, you know, Hemingway or Faulkner drinking themselves silly, it's not really possible to do good work when you're hungover.
I would imagine it would be very difficult, yeah.
So a side benefit is I'm pretty clear-minded most of the week
okay.
because of that. But that's more or less my process. I do sometimes do editing and clean up and that kind of thing on the weekends. And I'm slowly building an author platform, which would be the website. So I'm going to have a website out, I hope, in September. I've already purchased the domain and all that stuff, but it isn't quite ready for prime time yet. And then and some social media, but not a lot yet. Right now, I'm pretty focused on, like I said, building up the inventory so that when somebody comes, they find things to buy.
Tell me about, you brought it up, tell me about two things. First of all, I was unaware that you did your own promotions, and I was also unaware that you have to pay for that sort of thing. How much money should a person expect, if they want to be successful, to spend on getting going? And also, what type of promotion do you have? Now, if you're with a regular publisher, they send you out on book signing deals and stuff like that. You don't have that sort of thing, but what do you have to do?
So I would say starting out, it's cheap.
Yeah.
So you can do it on a shoestring. Probably the most... So you can get on Amazon's KDP...
What's that stand for, KDP?
Kindle Direct Publishing.
Oh, okay.
I mean, honestly, because Amazon's the largest player in the ebook space, you can just do that to start off with. I mean, if all you want to do is just get your foot in the water. And it's as simple as, I mean, the one thing you do have to do is format the book for ebook, but there are services out there that you can basically plug a Word document into, and it'll do that for you. It won't be the spiffiest thing ever, but it'll be sufficient. And that's what I do with most of my stuff.
Is it expensive to do that, to plug it in?
There are people that will do it for free.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's programs that do it. There's a way to do it even just in Word, it takes a little learning, and I'm lazy, and I know how to do it, but I just don't want to work that hard at each book. I plug it into something.
I will tell your mother that you admitted that finally.
That I'm lazy? Oh, she knows. So that doesn't cost anything. I would say, and dropping it out on Amazon doesn't cost you anything.
Oh, really?
No. They make their money. What they do is they take a cut.
Okay.
If you sell anything, they get 15%.
All right. Whether you sell it for $100 or you sell it for $1.50.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Eminently capitalistic, and that's fine. I mean,
okay.
It makes total sense. So they love it when people sell lots of books because they get 15% of it.
Sure.
But the one thing that you do, you may have to spend money on, not a ton, but is the cover. And I don't do that because I have enough knowledge of Photoshop and image manipulation.
So do you do all your covers?
Yeah.
Really? I have one pasted up on my refrigerator door. Okay.
Yeah.
It's very good.
You do have to have a little knowledge there, like I said, of like image manipulation and some knowledge of how like a book cover should appear. Like there's a science to it, and I'm still an amateur. I think I qualify myself as a marginally inspired amateur at it. I can put a decent cover.
Yeah, I like the one I have.
If you don't have that skill set or you don't have some of the software for it, you'd have to pay for that. You can buy images out on, you know, a number of sites, though, for a book cover for, I mean, pretty cheap.
Yeah.
But that would be the only outlay. And I would suggest if you, I mean, don't go copy and paste something off Google because you'll be violating.
Yeah.
You'll be violating copyright.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to pay for that. There are a number of free sites where you can get stuff, but even with that, like, I hit those, you know, for bits and pieces that I can, you know, that are free, but by the time I'm done with them, you can't recognize them. I mean, I've pretty much made them my own through a cleanup process. Don't go steal any images. Like, don't go and take somebody else's book cover.
Yeah, we don't want to visit you in jail. Right, okay.
So that would be the only real layout, you know. So really cheap. I mean, since I haven't purchased one recently, but I think you can get images as cheap as $5.
Oh, wow!
I mean, you'll get what you pay for, but
yeah.
So beyond that, you're not talking about a whole lot of outlay to publish a book.
Do self-publishing people ever do book signings?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Really?
I mean, you'd have to have, so to get that kind of attention, because think about it, a book signing, you can get that set up at a library.
Uh-huh.
And that's not hard, because they love books, and they love the idea of a local author coming in, and you'd have to have hard copies.
Yeah. Now, how do you do that?
That's a little trickier.
Yeah.
So here's the thing with that. Again, a lot of these services, because print-on-demand technology is very advanced, so you can set up one of your books, as long as you have, and it's a little bit more involved because you have to understand how to make a wraparound cover instead of just one picture.
Right.
And that's a little bit more tricky, and that does require a little bit more know-how or software. But as long as you know how to do that, there are services out there, again, that will basically, if you plug in all the digital specs, they will print it for you. And if somebody orders print, like from the print-on-demand service, they'll print it for you. So you could, if you were wanted to do a book signing, you would print, like, I don't know, 10 books or something, and you could go sit at a table in your local library, and bang, you've got a book signing.
Yeah.
And some do that. The thing with hard copy is that the as an independent, unless you're selling a lot, you can't take advantage of economies of scale. So if you sell a book, a hard copy book, for $9.99 or whatever, the cost to print that one book probably is eating almost all your margins. So paperback is hard for independent authors. Not pointless, but they would be more like your loss leaders. Like, you do it so that it's another form of marketing. You do it because, you know, there would be that chance of somebody carrying around a hard copy of your book on a plane or whatever, you know.
So most of the books that you sell, they're e-books. They are not even soft copy, are they?
Correct.
Yeah.
Just e-books at this point.
Now,
at some point, I'll stretch my legs and get out into that other stuff, but not quite there yet.
When you can buy your books on Amazon, and if you buy them, are those also just e-books, or are they soft?
It's all electronic. They're out on Amazon. They're out on Barnes & Noble and Apple Books and a bunch of other places.
Now,
most of the big places.
If somebody wanted to get one of your books, how would they do that?
Well, you could just go to Amazon and type in your Kindles, or in your the search bar at the top where you search on programs. And if you type in KJ space Coble, which is C-O-B-L-E, a list of my stuff will pop up.
Now, don't you have to we were talking about this yesterday, and Dr. Feynman, who is my guest yesterday, said, now, I typed it in and I couldn't get it, but when I put a hyphen at the end of KJ Coble, it popped up.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you might check with Amazon, make sure they're doing it right.
Oh, I'm doing it right now, as a matter of fact.
Okay, all right. Well,
so it's all lower. I just type it all in lowercase.
Right.
There's no, so that's the thing. There's no periods. It's just KJ Coble.
Okay.
Yeah, if you do that, if you type in all lowercase KJ space Coble.
You put a space in there.
Yeah, there's a space.
Okay. Now, a lot of people, as you and I both know, think Coble is spelled with two B's. It is not. It's C-O-B-L-E.
That would be Cobble.
Yeah, that's right. How many times have you answered that, told people that? Or people...
Well, it's interesting, because there's a few Cobles out there. There's a Colleen Coble who sells romance novels.
Is that right?
She's fairly successful.
Huh.
And occasionally she'll pop up in my searches, and I'm like, no, I'm not her. She's got good game. She's got nice covers and good. I think she's a bigger player in the space. But romance is very profitable in the ebook space. Actually, in all literature, people aren't always aware of that.
As you know, your mother's read every Harlequin romance there is, I think.
Well, that's exactly why it's so profitable. A lot of people enjoy it. It's probably the biggest selling category.
Well, it's because she's married to me, who has no romance in my body, so.
Well, this is probably not the forum for us to have this conversation, Dad.
Well, now, what are your future plans as far as books and stuff?
Well, I have a pretty ambitious production schedule through next April, so I'm pretty much going to be cranking out one a month. Book a month. Yeah, well, I mentioned earlier I have kind of a trunk of unpublished stuff, and I've been firing those off as I have time to edit them, because some of them are surprisingly pretty darn good. I was actually one of the revelations I've had is that I actually hadn't gotten a lot better. I was already pretty decent, in my humble opinion. Good enough for some people, I guess.
Yeah.
So I've been cranking these out in between new material I've been cranking out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of just filling in the space. So I should have, I expect to have about 20 books published by next April.
Do you ever
and
get?
I'm probably going to take a little break.
Do you ever get confused when you're writing two books at one time?
No, I write one at a time.
Oh, okay. So you don't.
So that's.
I get you.
So a lot of, I mean, basically I'm writing the new stuff as fast as I can, and interspersing that with older stuff that comes out.
But you're writing editing those at a different time than when you're writing your new stuff.
Right,
yeah,
right.
I got you.
Correct.
Now, I'm going to tell everybody a little story about you.
Oh, good.
Well, I'm not going to tell the bad ones, you and the girls. You have been writing since, my guess is, you were 7 years old, maybe even earlier, because you used to write comic books. Have you ever thought about doing comic books? I mean, I guess they're called, what are they called, graphic novels now. Have you ever thought about doing those?
No, my art skills are not up to par.
Okay, I got you. Well, I would imagine there are guys or women that have no art skills that still write comic books and then have somebody else do their artwork for them.
Guessing. Yeah, they script them.
Yeah. Yeah,
I haven't actually thought about that before, no.
Well, think about it.
Okay.
I want to be able to tell everybody my son is a comic book writer.
Okay, well, I'll work on that.
You have been writing for a long, long, long time. You used to write and produce and film movies in our basement, if you recall, right?
Yes.
We still have one of them. And it was pretty good.
Yeah, for like early to mid 80s, like video VHS film, yeah.
But the star of the show almost was always Andrew, because he was 7 years your junior. And
yeah, he was
cute as a bug in a rug.
He still is. does. It's annoying as hell.
Yeah, I know. But he doesn't like that you're 6'2 or 6'3 and he's only 5'11. So, you know, they're good and bad of being my sons.
I'm shrinking, so soon I'll be his height.
I feel that. I've already shrunk. Yeah. By the way, for our listeners, these two boys, Andrew and Christopher, KJ, they have a sister, Amy, and she's mean as a cob. Oh. If she's listening, Amy, if you're listening, I'm sorry. She's kind of a tough girl.
She's but tough. She's not mean.
She does not write, though, I don't think. Does she?
No, I don't think that's part of her journey, no.
No, she's busy taking care of four kids.
Yeah, and she's a wonderful mother.
She is a wonderful mother, and she also teaches and administers swimming stuff. She was a pretty good soccer coach in college, too.
She might be one of the busiest women I know.
Yeah, she sure is.
Now, always doing something.
Now, your younger brother is a vintner and also a special, I'm going to call him a special ed teacher. That's not really his title, but he works with, you know, kids that are autistic, kids that have problems. And he does pretty good in that line. And he makes pretty good wine, doesn't he?
He does. I enjoy his wine very much. My wife and I enjoyed his wine on our anniversary this past week.
And my wife and I enjoyed his wine last week on my birthday. So, it also makes it a lot easier that it gets here free. Now, you had to pay for it, but Mom and Dad don't.
We had to pay for it, but we got family prices. So.
Good.
Fortunately, because the good stuff is not cheap, and they make some good stuff.
Yes, they do. I forgot. Majestic Oak Vineyard is the name of the place. And there, by the way, there is...
California.
Yeah, in Ojai, California, because there is a Majestic Oak winery here in Ohio.
I was not aware of that.
Yes, and their label doesn't look anything like Majestic Oak Vineyard. What would you consider a good goal for income for a person who wants to become a self-publishing writer who does want to do that only as their work? What can you shoot for?
Well, I would say, first of all, this is not the kind of thing that you want to start off with, like, I want to make money, because that should be a goal, but, like, you should start off with just writing because you like to write.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, if your brain says, I need to make money.
Better go to Walmart or something. Yeah.
Well, it's just going to ruin the whole thing, because if you sit there and think about the money and then you publish one book and it makes nothing or it makes peanuts, you'll be crushed. And you can't have that. You have to have a longer vision for it. You have to do it because you enjoy it, and the rest of it comes later. I've only just started making a few $100s, and I've been doing it a little over a year. And it took a while even to get to that point. With quite a few books.
Well, your very first book, when did you publish the very first book?
I published the first two kind of right around the same time.
Okay.
And I think it was last April.
Okay. So you've been working at it for a while, and you are prolific. I mean, you put out quite a few in that time.
Yeah, and that's kind of part of my business plan.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's kind of my postgraduate MBA, evil capitalism. genius brain syndrome coming in. The soulless part of me is like, yes, we have to do these things to make money. But
get regimented.
I have a mind towards it. But I would say if you start off focused on the money, you're going to fail.
Yeah,
I mean,
I can see that.
It's just it takes time. People get, you know, they read about these people who get these advances with their first book of like $250,000, which actually doesn't happen much anymore.
Yeah.
And they get this diseased idea, and it just poisons. It takes the joy out of it. You got to do it because you enjoy it first. Now, as far as setting goals for yourself, I would say that it's whatever you need to live. Like, if you're a single person and you can really put the time in, I imagine, and that was your entire life, you could do it in a few years. There are people who have done it in a few years and have built up to, you know, a modest living. and some people even who have been wildly successful. But I think the money has to come after the joy of the work itself. I mean, there's a great, and I think it comes from, it might be Hindu religion, I can't remember where I heard it from, but the saying goes that you are entitled to your labor, but not necessarily the fruits of your labor.
Huh.
And that's basically saying, enjoy what you're doing, mm-hmm. and that's the only thing you can control.
Okay.
And I've found that to be pretty freeing, and it allows me not to worry and to just focus on the good stuff, which is really, really, I mean, isn't that the point of making the money, so you can free yourself to do the writing, the good stuff?
Yeah. Now, what is there a hook that people can go to that kind of assures that they will get sold? Or is it just, I mean, do you have to be a great writer, or can you use tricks to get people to buy your books?
Well, I mean, so you mentioned advertising earlier.
Yeah.
And so let me tell you a little about that.
Yeah, please.
It's something I've only just started putting my toes into.
Yeah.
And so digital marketing, which is all around us, I mean, it's not like rocket science. I mean, there is a science to it, but that's the hook. So there are ways to advertise on Amazon with your books. They have services that do that. There are ways to do it through other means, and I won't list them here now because there's
too many.
Truly, a whole constellation of them.
Yeah.
But you can engage in what's called paid per click advertising. So
yeah.
And that's stuff that, you know, Walmart does that. Everybody does that. And it basically nests content, which would be your ads for your book, in places where people who buy books are likely to find it. So Amazon will put it, you know, if you ever search on something in Amazon and you get all these recommendations,
uh-huh.
Well, some of those recommendations, if you look really clever, really closely, they say sponsored. And that those recommendations,
yes.
are, they're not so much recommendations as somebody paid to put that recommendation there.
Yeah.
And that's not all that different than, if you ever walked into a bookstore and seen the end cap at the head of an
sure.
aisle and their books conspicuously placed there.
Right.
Well, somebody pays to have those books conspicuously placed there.
Right.
And it's the same concept with these paid-per-click ads. So that's one hook, but that does cost money. I mean, and there is, you have to be very careful, and it's targeted, so you have to understand marketing. You know, that's where, again, my evil MBA background has begun to serve me well. Because I enjoy that, thinking about that kind of thing. Now, if you don't enjoy doing that, that might be a hurdle.
You are kind of a junior conspiracy theorist.
Well, this is a conspiracy.
Conspiracy to get people to buy. But,
yeah. But I enjoy it. And I also, in my job, my day job, I work with people who work in marketing and analyzing, you know, in our case, it's an academic product, if you will.
Yeah.
But we analyze and we look at, you know, who responds to this content, who responds to this, you know, instruction, stuff like that. And it's not all that different than analyzing who responds to advertisements about, you know, science fiction shoot 'em up novels.
Yeah.
Well, so that would be a hook.
Do they actually get down in targeting? Do they actually get down to specific things like they like shoot 'em up, science-fi, fiction? I mean,
oh, yeah.
Do they go that?
Some of them are that specific.
Yeah.
Amazon, I don't think anybody knows how deep and rich Amazon's data is, but it's a little creepy.
Might be scary.
They understand behavioral analytics.
Yeah.
They know how to put product in front of people that they are likely to buy. Yeah. So somebody knows all that, but even a layperson who can teach themselves can understand some of this. You know, it's something like this. It's like, you know, that people buy this person's stuff, and your stuff is like that person. So you point your advertisement at that person's
uh-huh.
audience. It's, and I'm really making it simplistic here, but it's actually not that much more complicated than that.
Do you have anybody that buys all your stuff, other than your mother?
I see. So I have people who like one set of my stuff, and I have people who like another set of my stuff. I suspect I have one super fan.
Oh,
so
okay.
Because I only have the one super fan. Well, it's not mom.
Now you say there are sets. So one set is more violent than the other, or what's the difference between
different
the
genres.
Sets?
So I'm in science fiction and I'm in fantasy, and I have a science fiction series, The Hell's Jesters, which is three books to date. There will eventually be six.
Were those the first three?
What's that?
Were those the first three?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have a couple standalones that aren't series. They're just floating around in my ecosystem.
Uh-huh.
That who knows, maybe I'll make into series later. I haven't decided.
Right.
But I have a couple that I've deliberately made series. So I have a second, I have a fantasy series. It's the Exiles series, and that's three so far today. I just published the third one only a couple days ago, I think.
Wow.
And so some of these are set up that way to kind of... But I have one super fan to your question earlier.
Okay.
So I know it's one person because they purchase through one specific vendor, and so I have a ping for almost every book from that one vendor.
Huh.
And so I'm pretty sure it's one person who pretty much picks up everything I put out.
Well, that's kind of neat. Yeah. Apparently you've hit a warm spot in that person's heart.
Apparently.
Hey, now,
some of that's luck. I have other people who have bought all one series and leave everything else alone.
I understand that.
And I have a couple people who nibble all around.
Mm-hmm.
And I, the series are the strong ones. Those are the ones that have generated the most interest.
I would think.
Because, somebody likes the first one, and then they go and buy the second.
They got to buy the second, and then they got to buy the third or whatever. Yeah. Now,
it's pretty classic funnel strategy.
Yeah. Now, we're down to, about 3.5 minutes. So give us the address again where people can send and get this, and maybe the process of how they have to do it. I assume they do it by credit card.
So the simplest method is to just go to your ebook vendor of choice. I've talked a lot about Amazon just simply because everybody knows that.
Yeah.
You could do it at Barnes & Noble or whatever. And if you search in the search bar, you can type in, like I said, all lowercase. Actually, it doesn't even have to be lowercase. It's just KJ, so no period, no punctuation, KJ space COBLE. And that should bring up pretty much everything I've put out.
Nice picture of you on that, by the way.
No, thank you. Yeah.
Yes, it looks very good.
Your granddaughter took that picture.
Oh, okay.
And you should see, the items will list out. You'll see them there. And, if anybody's interested, I recommend you. Amazon's nice because they give you a teaser, so you can read, 10% of the book for free.
Oh.
So you can get a taste of whatever's out there. That's always fun. A lot of the other vendors have that same function. They give you a preview of some piece of the book. So you can go and say, hey, maybe that's a voice that you like.
Can you run down the names of your books? That might give us a taste. Or at least give us four or five of them.
So there's the Hell's Jesters series, which starts with Hell's Jesters, and it's followed by Cry Havoc, and then Rebel Hell is the third one.
Uh-huh.
And then the Exiles trilogy is really easy to remember because the word Exiles is in all the titles, but that one's Lord of Exiles, Legion of Exiles, and Republic of Exiles.
Uh-huh.
And that one's a fantasy, and that has kind of a Roman Republic history kind of vibe to it. So.
Yeah, you kind of like that era.
Yeah. That's kind of my jam.
Yeah. And what are the the single ones by themselves?
So there's a few of those, and they're a mixed bag. They're a lot of fun. There's The Tome of Flesh, which I have already had to tell somebody, no, is not an adult content novel. Fantasy novel. And it's a reference to the nasty magical artifact in the book. There's another one called The Shadows of Monothir, which is basically another fantasy, kind of a grittier urban fantasy type, not urban, but a fantasy taking place in an ancient city type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Magic Fire Metal Storm, which was one of the first ones I put out.
Yes.
And that's a weird one. That's kind of 19th century Civil War era level technology.
Cool.
Versus wizards. So pretty short. Okay. Explanation of it.
Well, we're down to our final 30 seconds, so that works out pretty well.
All right.
Hey, Christopher, tell your family that we had a great time on Memorial Day, and we'll see you soon, but thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
And have a great day today.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right, Christopher Coble there on our show. Happens to be my son. I love having him on. We'll talk to you after the break.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio.